Let's look at Matthew chapter 2, starting at verse 13, and remind ourselves of the wrapping up of our last story, which was the visitation of the wise men. These magi from the east, meaning somewhere in Mesopotamia, so perhaps in Persia itself, maybe modern-day Iran, these guys saw something in the sky which prompted them to pay attention to the Jewish holy books, books like Daniel and Numbers, which brought them to Jerusalem looking for the newborn Messiah. And King Herod is very upset about all this. This is during a time in his life where he has executed people in his own family, his own brother. He suspected of wanting him off the throne and putting someone on other than what Herod wanted. So he's very paranoid when it comes to matters of the kingdom and the next person to sit on the throne. So Herod gets all the information about when this supernatural sign showed up to these wise men, and then sends them to Bethlehem to find the Messiah and come back and tell him which house he's in so that he can come and worship. Of course, he's lying through his teeth. He plans on executing the Messiah, or murdering him. Now, we are told that after the Magi presented their gifts, and they would have arrived after dark because they saw this supernatural phenomena called the star leading them from Jerusalem to Bethlehem and to a specific house at Bethlehem. And that would have happened after dark. So after they've presented their gifts, everybody kind of settles down to go to sleep for the night. The Magi are probably in camp just outside the city. And it says, verse 13, "Now when they had departed," that is, the angel had warned them to get out of town, so they left. So that entourage is away. "That behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream." So right around the same time, probably, middle of the night. "Joseph is told, rise, take the child and his mother, flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him. And so he rose, he took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod." Now, we know exactly when Herod died. He died in the spring of 4 BC. So this event seems to be happening shortly before that, right around 5 BC sometime. We know Jesus turned 2 years of age, right around the spring of 5 BC. So they make a run for it at the prompting of God to head to a place that has a ton of Jews. Alexandria, Egypt, was the second largest city in the Roman Empire. It had many hundreds of thousands of people. And it had a huge Jewish population. I don't know how big it was. It may have been 100,000 or more. And so they can go down there and disappear into that group. Just another young couple with a toddler. And no one would be able to find them. And Herod, of course, doesn't have any authority in Egypt either. So anyone he sends down there would have to try to do all this on the sly. So, the next thing we are told, though, by Matthew is commentary of prophecy fulfillment. It says, "This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son." Now, that's a quotation of Hosea 11:1. If you just read it in the context of Israeli history, it's a reference to the fact that God brought the Israeli people out of Egypt at the time of the Exodus, and that God was treating the nation of Egypt as his firstborn son. But Matthew, reading it, goes, hey, you know what? The Holy Spirit tells me that this is another fulfillment, a deeper fulfillment of the Hosea passage, because he will bring his son Jesus out of Egypt into the promised land. And so we have to love God's double entendres, double meanings, which we have quite a few that show up in prophecy. Now, verse 16. Herod, when he saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men, when he saw that they had not returned and given him information, he became furious. Now, when did he figure this out? Well, they don't show up the next day. He might have thought that they were spending extra time down there. But he's paranoid enough that he may have already suspected on that day something's not right. So it says that he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were under 2 years old, who were 2 years old and under, according to the time that he'd ascertained from the wise men. So this gets back to the fact that he had grilled them. Exactly when did this supernatural star show up for you? Because he's trying to figure out, when was the child born, or possibly when was the child conceived? Because now he can calculate a larger possibility of age for being targeted. Now, the wording here is not altogether certain. I think it actually means all children under three. So those that are actively living their two-year life and under. And so that matches kind of what we've been working on here. Jesus born in 7. If we're now in 5 BC, then he would have already been, he'd already been past the celebration of his second birthday and working his way through that second year. And so Herod probably also put a little buffer in there, a little bit of padding, in order to make sure he kills all of the boys that might be the Messiah. Now, how many kids is that going to be? We don't know. Again, I suggest to you, based on other information we have in the first century BC histories, that Bethlehem may have been a town of a couple of tens of thousands of people. And so if you take a place with 20,000 people, then there's bound to be quite a few boys under the age of three. And so this is a great massacre. Now, it's not found in any secular histories of Herod. And some people have said, well, it must not have happened because it's not listed in the histories, and it must have been horrendous. Well, Herod did a lot of bad stuff, especially in these last few months of his life. The killing of a bunch of baby boys in Bethlehem may not have made the list, may not have made the cut of all his other atrocities. So I'm not too surprised by it not being there. But anyway, this is, I think, being prompted by Satan. Satan knows the Messiah has been born. He knows he's been born somewhere in Bethlehem, but he is not capable of knowing exactly which baby boy in Bethlehem he is. So he manipulates the situation in order to kill as many potential Messiahs as possible. Now, this is, this is another reason why I suspect that the supernatural sign of the star was only seen by the wise men. Because if Satan's minions had seen where that star was settled in Bethlehem, they would have known exactly which baby boy was the one to be targeted. But it seems as if we've got spiritual warfare going on here. where the supernatural forces of Satan are being kept in the dark, just like Herod has been kept in the dark. Now, Matthew, who loves pointing to Old Testament prophecies being fulfilled, gives us another one in connection with the birth of Jesus and the massacre of the babies at Bethlehem. Verse number 17, "Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah." And this is from Jeremiah chapter 31, starting at verse 15. "A voice was heard in Ramah." Now, Ramah is a city north of Jerusalem, just a few miles. And it is the more likely site of Rachel's tomb. Her tomb is probably on the south side of Ramah. This is confusion of a lot of people because throughout history, Christian history, some Bible scholars have assumed that it must have been at Bethlehem. But it doesn't seem to be. It seems to be in the tribe of Benjamin's territory north of Jerusalem. Now, the reason Jeremiah brings it up is because in his day, during the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians because of the sins of the Israeli people at that time, Ramah was the location of the processing camp of all the Jewish survivors of the destruction of Jerusalem, where they were getting prepared to be taken into Babylon as exiles. And so there was a lot of refugees, as we would say, camped at Ramah, and they were weeping and they were wailing and they were crying. And a lot of the crying was over the fact that a lot of kids had been killed in the siege of Jerusalem and in its final taking. And so that's the context of the book of Jeremiah chapter 31. "So a voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children," because her tomb was nearby Ramah. So she's weeping over her kids. "She refused to be comforted because they are no more." And so all that Matthew does is say, Rachel's weeping again. Rachel, the mother of Israel, the mother of the Jewish people, is weeping over the deaths of all these babies at Bethlehem. Verse number 19. "But when Herod died..." Now, we're not quite ready to move forward, because I want to give you some more of the secular history of King Herod, because it helps us to understand the things that come up next in the story of Matthew chapter 2. So, in 5 BC, we know that Herod was waiting for permission from the emperor, Augustus Caesar, to carry out the execution of his son, Antipater, who's about 42, 43 years of age. He'd been convicted by his father of attempted patricide, the attempted murder of his dad. And so Herod is waiting for that, and it now moves into the early months of 4 BC. And there are Jewish religious leaders that are getting more and more agitated in the latter years of Herod, that he is not as respectful to the Jewish faith as he should be. And so in March of 4 BC, there were two of these teachers that were pretty sure that Herod was about to die or had actually died. And so they decided it was time to clean up Jerusalem, and specifically to clean up the temple. What I'm about to read to you is from Josephus's Wars of the Jews, book number 1, chapter number 23. Quote, "There were two men of learning in the city of Jerusalem who were thought the most skillful in the laws of their country, and were on that account held in very high esteem over all the nation. They were, the one, Judas, the son of Sepphoris, and the other, Matthias, the son of Margalus. There was a great concourse of the young men to these men, when they expounded the law, and they got together every day a kind of army as such as were growing up to be men." So these are two very popular rabbis, and they hold teaching sessions in the temple courts each day. And tons of young Jewish men come to them to hear what they have to say. And so when this rumor that Herod was dead popped up, this Judas and Matthias, these two rabbis, told their students, "You need to go and tear down that golden eagle that Herod put up over the eastern gate of the temple." Now, when you think about the temple complex, you have to think of it as larger rectangles nesting smaller rectangles inside of them. And so this has all been reconstructed by Herod recently. So you've got the huge Temple Mount rectangle that is the court of the nations, the court of the Gentiles. And it's got a perimeter of covered walkways. So that's the larger court. A couple of 100,000 people can jam into that. Then you've got another rectangle that is the court of the women, that is in front of a rectangle that is the court of the priests, or the court of Israel, where all the worship happens. The shrine building is actually inside that that court of Israel, or the court of the priests. So between the court of women on the east and the court of priests, which is on the west, where the shrine building is in, there is a big gateway, and it has a great big bronze gate in it. And it was over the top of this gate, facing east, that Herod had a big wooden eagle placed that was then coated in gold. So that's why it's referred to as a golden eagle. Now, he probably had two things in mind when he put it up. One of the things was that the symbol of the Romans is the golden eagle. That's what all of the legions carry everywhere that they go. And so this was a bit of a covert nod to Judea, the kingdom of the Jews, being part of the grand Roman Empire, a proud part of it from Herod's standpoint. He is, after all, the third most powerful person in the Roman Empire. But the religious reason that he used, no doubt, is that a passage of Scripture says that God, this is God speaking. He says, "I carried you to myself out of Egypt on eagle's wings." And so the eagle for the Jewish people was often a symbol of God's provision and protection from the Exodus onward. And so I believe that he convinced everybody that this eagle was to symbolize that concept. God is our eagle. We are under his wings. We have been carried on his back into this promised land. Now, this was problematic, even if it was religious, for the Pharisees of this time. because the Pharisees of the later first century BC, and definitely the Pharisees of the entire first BC, or first century AD, they didn't want any type of images in the temple whatsoever. Josephus actually accuses King Solomon of violating the law by putting the 12 bronze bulls underneath the big water tank whenever he designed the original building of the temple. The Pharisees, like Josephus, thought that he was breaking God's rule. Now, we know that's not true. All we have to do is go back and read the text, and we know that it was the Holy Spirit speaking to David that gave that specific design, which allowed there to be faces and living objects in the temple itself. When Herod had this eagle put up, at least some of the Jewish people would have been fine with it because it represented something spiritual. But a lot of others who were part of this growing Pharisaic rejection of any images, even those that are just artwork, they hate it. And so that's what these two guys are about. These two rabbis and all their students, they want that thing gone because it's an image. Doesn't matter that it might represent something spiritual. They want it gone. So 40 of the students of these two guys climb up on top of that gate and let each other down on ropes and chop that eagle down. Break it up in pieces, because it's wood covered with gold, so they're able to take it apart with axes. Well, they end up getting arrested by Herod's security forces for doing this, because guess what? King Herod isn't dead. That was a false rumor. And these guys just chopped up part of the temple. And so he actually accuses them of desecration of God's house. And they are put on trial, and they are found guilty, and then they are sent to Jericho to be executed. So all of that happened in March of 4 BC. Now, that's the 12th month of the Jewish year, by the way. On the 13th day of that same Jewish month, the 12th month, so now we're heading toward the middle of March, Herod assembled all the leading Jews together in the theater at Jerusalem, where he reminded them that all of the things that he did in the renovation of the temple were sacred. And he told the assembly that he considered the vandalism of this eagle to be a sacrilege because he dedicated it to God. And so this caused all of the leading Jews to agree with him and to disavow the action of these students. Because as Josephus says, these guys are kind of afraid that Herod might start executing them as well. So Herod then removed Matthias, who was the current high priest, and replaced him with a different guy, because apparently this high priest can't keep things under control. And then, as I said, the students end up being executed at Jericho on the 13th day of the Jewish month. And the reason we know it happened on the 13th day of the 12th Jewish month is because Josephus mentions a partial eclipse of the moon that happens the following evening. And so that happened, we know for a fact, on the night that was the 12th going into the 13th day of March in 4 BC. This is another one of the reasons we know exactly when Herod dies, because we've got astronomical associations with it. All right, so at this point, Herod is struggling with the effects of his terminal illness. So he leaves Jerusalem for the very last time in March of 4 BC, which is another anchor for us, because we know now that the wise men had to have come before he left, because they met with him at Jericho. Now, we're kind of running out of time, so let me describe to you his physical condition at this time. It says that a distemper seized upon his whole body, greatly disordered all his parts with various symptoms, for there was a gentle fever upon him, an intolerable itching all over the surface of his body, continual pains in his colon, and dropsical tumors about his feet, which means he had edema. He had great big swollen feet. And an inflammation of the abdomen and a putrefaction of his privy member that produced worms. So basically, he's got worms coming out of his bottom. So he's got parasites as well as all sorts of other horrible conditions. He's about 70 years old now. Besides which, he had a difficulty of breathing upon him. He couldn't breathe except when he sat upright. He had convulsions of his members, so he's got the tremors that we see sometimes with various diseases, particularly in age. Insomuch that the diviners said that these diseases were a punishment upon him for what he'd done to the rabbis. So this stuff suddenly started happening not long after he had these rabbis and their students executed. And so he is in a mess. And so what he does is he goes down to Jericho, which has a warmer climate in March. And then from there, he goes over to the east side of the Dead Sea to a place called Calairo, which has hot springs, hot mineral springs, and he starts trying to deal with his sickness there.